For the past 60 years, Catholics have been imitating Protestants in our liturgy, our youth outreach, and other aspects of Catholic life. How has this impacted the church, and is there a better way forward? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sam, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, I just want to encourage people to smash that like button, subscribe to the channel. We'd really appreciate it. Also, you can follow us on social media at Crisis Mag at all the major social media channels. Easy for me to say. You know, I had an article that I was editing, and it mentions Twitter on there and says something about a tweet, and I just simply cannot get to the X thing yet. And I'm not quite sure, what do we call it? Do we say we posted on X? We tweeted on X? I don't really know. But anyway, that's a mess for Elon to figure out. Okay, so first of all, I just want to say happy feast of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. If you're listening to this live or on the same day that I record it, today is August 15th, 2023. So it is a great feast day in the life of the church, in which our Blessed Mother was assumed body and soul into heaven. If you have not yet gone to Mass today, make sure you do. It's a holy day of obligation. And frankly, it's a holy day that you don't want to miss. So happy feast of the Assumption. Okay, so today what I want to talk about is the fact that Catholic life, a lot of Catholic leaders, a lot of Catholics, they've made the practice of the faith more and more Protestant. And I think it's in obvious ways and some not so obvious ways. There's been a Protestantization of Catholicism in the church. You see this particularly in America, which is a very Protestant country. We also see it in other Western countries. I can't speak for outside of that area, but what you see, though, is you see Protestantization. And as a former Protestant, I see this very clearly. I see ways in which Catholics are imitating Protestants, and they don't even always realize they're doing that. But what they're doing, in fact, is they're abandoning a lot of Catholic practices and Catholic, just a Catholic way of looking at the world and a Catholic way of life that is frankly superior and better able to glorify God and also bring people to the church. So let's cover that. So I really think this started in force in the 1960s. And if you want a detailed explanation of why, read my book, Deadly Indifference, which I have on the shelf here behind me. That's why I'm pointing up. But what I talk about there is the rise of ecumenism, among other things. And really, this is the key factor here. Ecumenism, the goal of ecumenism is a couple, multiple ones, but one of them is to see how much we are alike other Christian denominations. So how is Catholicism like Lutherans? How much is Catholicism like the Presbyterians or the Baptists or whatever? And be united on those things in which we're alike. Now, one could argue whether or not that's a good goal or not, something we should really be striving for or not. What I want to say is I think that the goalposts have moved. Instead of a matter of being, how are we alike, Catholics have turned to how much can we be more like them? That it's ecumenical to reduce our differences between the two. If the goal is just simply unity, and we don't care what unity is in, then a lot of Catholic leaders have come to the conclusion that if we're more like Protestants, we're more united. Now, they might not state it like that, but that's the result, ultimately, is ecumenism has become, on the Catholic end at least, how can we be more like Protestants? Now, what I notice is Protestants don't really do the same thing the other direction. They're not trying to become more Catholic. You don't see very many Protestant churches being like, okay, let's have a higher liturgy. Let's have devotions to the Blessed Mother, anything like that. They're not trying to be like us. We're trying to be like them. We're trying to be like them in some failed attempt at unity. Of course, true unity comes in the Catholic Church, being fully Catholic, everybody coming under the Bishop of Rome and being in the Catholic Church. But that's not what's happening here. So we're becoming more and more like Protestants. And I want to talk about four ways in particular in which we are imitating Protestants. The first one is the liturgy. This is the most obvious one. This is the most explicit one. And this was done in an official manner. by the Catholic Church in the 1960s when it changed to the new mass. There's no question, it's not a debatable historical point or anything, that the people who came up with the new mass wanted it to be more, how shall we say, just more acceptable to Protestants. So the sacrificial nature of the mass was toned down. A lot of the extras of the mass were toned down. And it was the explicit purpose was to be more ecumenical. So Protestants wouldn't be so taken aback by the mass. And we see that's directly in the documents of Vatican II as well. And here's my trusty documents of Vatican II, which I've had for over 30 years now, and it's in poor condition, but it still does the trick. In the document on the sacred liturgy at Vatican II, which is actually one of the better documents of Vatican II, and there's a lot in it that's good, you can see this idea of becoming more Protestant in the documents themselves. So for example, it says in paragraph 34, the rites should be distinguished by a noble simplicity. They should be short, clear, and free from useless repetitions. They should be within the people's powers of comprehension and normally should not require much explanation. Frankly, that's exactly what the Protestant reformers wanted. That's right out of the playbook of the Protestants. They did not want a liturgy that was complex, that was in a foreign language, that was had lots of repetitious prayers. I mean, it's interesting because if you look at the Eastern Divine Liturgy, for example, that's very repetitive. You have the prayers in the Lord have mercy over and over again at the beginning, again in the middle, I mean, and at the end, I believe. So this idea of useless repetitions in the liturgy is a very Protestant idea. And then also the idea that it has to be simple and be within the people's powers of comprehension and normally should not require much explanation. There's so many problems with that, really, if you think about it. What people? Are we talking about a completely uneducated person who has no formal training in liturgy, doesn't know anything about Catholic theology, just a man off the street? Or are we talking about a college professor in sacred liturgy or something like that? What are we talking about here? And also, what does it mean within their comprehension and not require explanation? You mean the first time they show up? So that the first time they go to Mass, they should be able to understand everything going on? Why? Because the fact is, people, they don't go to Mass once. They go to it at least weekly for their entire lives. And so even if you don't understand it at first, you're going to start to understand it. I know the first time, for example, I went to the traditional Latin Mass, I didn't know what was going on at all. It was beyond my comprehension. And nothing could be, it was not explained to me. Yet, it wasn't like I was all of a sudden like, okay, this is just somehow anti-Christian or anti-God or anything like that. I was like, oh, this does seem to me to be worshiping God in a very noble way, in a very sacred and reverent way. I just didn't know how. But over time, now that I've been going to traditional Mass for 12 years now, I understand it a lot more than I used to. And so because of that, I think we have to understand that this idea of the Mass being simple and not being complex is frankly a Protestant idea. And so we see how Protestantism is impacting the liturgy. And you see it in other parts of the liturgy as well. Like, for example, the calendar, Vatican, again, this document on the sacred liturgy at Vatican II states that paragraph 111, it's like, lest the feasts of the saints should take precedence over the feasts which commemorate the very mysteries of salvation, many of them should be left to be celebrated by a particular church or nation or family of religious. Only those should be extended to the universal church, which commemorates saints who are truly of universal importance. Basically, this was the call to simplify the calendar, get rid of a lot of those saints, which, you know, for example, St. Philomena, St. Christopher, I mean, just tons of saint days have been removed from the universal calendar. The idea somehow that by honoring people who serve Christ well, we somehow dishonor Christ or we forget about Christ was the idea. It's a Protestant idea because, again, the Protestants are the ones who got rid of the cult of the saints. The East didn't do that. That was the Protestants who did that. So you see this Protestantization even in these calls at Vatican II themselves. And so that becomes the basis for a lot of the changes in the liturgy. And you see it And then beyond that, you see it, of course, in how it's actually practiced in the church, how you have the music that is done at Mass is often very banal. It's modern. It's modern in the sense of 1970s. It's supposed to be kind of hip and cool. Obviously, it usually fails at that. But a lot of the aspects of the human aspects of how people actually celebrate the liturgy are very Protestant as well. They take this idea that the Protestant idea that you kind of take from the modern culture, unfortunately for Catholics, it seems like the modern culture ended in 1978, but you take from the modern culture and you make that the standard for music and other aspects of the liturgy. So I would say the Mass is probably the number one way, the liturgy, the number one way in which the practice of Catholicism has been Protestantized. But it's also in other places. A second way is the art and architecture of Catholicism. You go into your typical parish today that has been built in the last 50 years or so, and what you will see is almost no different than what you'll see in a typical Protestant church, except for a crucifix. That might be the only difference. Whereas a Protestant church might have a cross without the corpus, a Catholic church would have the cross with the corpus, a crucifix. There's very little difference. Yeah, there might be a statue or two, but it's very much simplified. And this is, again, a Protestant way of looking at art and architecture. You don't see saint statues. You don't see stained glass windows. You don't see buildings that are kind of built to glorify God. I mean, they're just kind of in the round and things like that. It's very much set up for a community center, as like a community center. It's like we're all getting together in community. We're talking to each other for an hour every Sunday morning, and then we go home. There's not this idea of we are going to a sacred space that is dedicated to God, and our purpose there is to glorify and worship Him. And that's our only purpose there. And so I really feel like that's another way in which we've Protestantized our Catholic faith in the practice of it. A third way, so we have the Mass, art and architecture. A third way, this one's probably the one that's most obvious to people. People might already be thinking, why haven't you said this one yet? And that's youth outreach. Youth outreach is we just do it the way the Protestants do it. We have youth groups just like they do. We have youth retreats just like they do. We do youth masses just like they do youth services, everything. And you saw this, of course, with World Youth Day. It was very much just like a Protestant youth gathering as far as how it was conducted, with the hip and cool mass music. I mean, the let's get people all excited and emotional. That's a very Protestant way of doing it. And that is not, it comes from Protestantism, the Protestant way of doing things, that we treat young people differently than we do adults. And we're very much feel like the only way we can keep them is to have fun. They have to always be having fun. If you have a night of youth group that's not fun, it's a failure. And that's a very Protestant way of looking at it. But Catholic youth groups all around the country, all around the world probably, do it exactly like the Protestants do. I was part of my youth group in high school, very involved with it. So I know what Protestant youth groups are like, and I've been to a few. I don't send my kids to Catholic youth groups anymore, but I've been to Catholic youth groups, and typically they have the same model as the Protestant ones. So that's the third one. The fourth way, so we have the Mass, art and architecture, youth groups, is evangelization, how we share our faith. It's very much a Protestant idea that we need to be relevant with the people. We need to be like them, to reach out to them. We need to kind of live in their world. We have to know what's going on in the modern culture. You see this all the time, like Christian rock music. It basically is, let's make music that sounds just like the popular music, but we'll put some Christian lyrics in it. Now, they don't usually do a very good job of it. The secular music's actually better. But that being said, I actually like some Christian rock music. I'll confess here. But the idea is everything has to be relevant. Everything has to be relevant, has to be like the culture. And that's how you see Catholics evangelize, the new evangelization. Everything under that banner is typically, let's evangelize like Protestants do. Let's be like the culture. Let's be like Let's use references to recent movies and things of that nature. Pop songs. I mean, you see it where I saw an article. It was National America Magazine, one of the National Catholic Register reporter, one of the heretical ones, but it was talking about how Taylor Swift, her songs can teach us a lot about the faith or something like that. That really gave me Protestant youth group vibes, because I remember those talks all the time when I was in youth group, how so-and-so, how this band, this rock band or whatever, I'm blanking on the names of all the pop stars in the 1980s, probably Madonna or whoever, how that really speaks to us about God or something like that. I mean, that's always what the hip youth ministers would do. Fortunately, I actually had a Protestant youth minister. This is a bit of an aside. My Protestant youth minister wasn't terrible. I mean, he was actually a man who loved the Lord, and he wasn't trying to be hip and cool to us. He still fell into a lot of the patterns of Protestantism, obviously, as he was a Protestant. But anyway, so in our evangelization, that's what we do. So we see, these are just some four examples, the big ones, but they're four examples. But we see a Protestant ethos in this. And another thing I want to mention is, like, another way this ethos kind of shines forth, we saw that in the controversies around World Youth Day and how they treated the Eucharist. It's a very Protestant way of looking at it, that we try to have this very simplistic way of, we have to have the IKEA bowls and stuff like that. That is exactly how Protestants often look at this stuff. Like, we have to be simple because Jesus was simple and things like that. Pierre Kwasniewski had a great article at Crisis last week about this, where he talks about, yes, it is true, our Lord was laid in a manger at his birth, a humble manger. However, the Magi who came to worship him did not bring dirt or trash or anything like that, or simple stuff like that. They brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They brought these very rich, the best they could, the best things they could. Whereas our Lord was being humble by lying in the manger. He is God. He's coming down the line in the manger. However, the Magi were being humble by recognizing how great God is and how much they're below him. So they give him their best. And so that's a Protestant ethic, though. That sounds like Protestants when I hear them talk about, oh, we want to have this simplicity with the plastic bowls to hold the Eucharist and things like that. That's right out of the playbook of Protestantism today. So what's the impact of this? Now, here is the argument you will hear sometimes from Catholics about why we do this. It's to attract Protestants. If we don't have such a big divide between Catholicism and Protestantism, the argument goes, then it'll be easier for people to cross it. The problem is most people are crossing the other way, or they're just leaving. They're going from Catholicism to Protestantism, because it's kind of like, well, I can get Protestantism better with the Protestants than the kind of pseudo-Protestantism I'm getting with Catholicism. And I don't have to worry about some of those messy rules like no contraception and no divorce and things like that. I just know as a Catholic convert myself, as a former Protestant, it wasn't the ways in which Catholicism was like Protestantism that attracted me. It wasn't the new Mass. I didn't go to Mass and thought, oh, I really want to be this. In fact, I was very disappointed. I was like, boy, this is a pale imitation of the Protestant services I was used to. Trust me, if it was just a matter of the liturgy, I would not have converted. What it was finding out, though, the way Catholicism was different. The way Catholicism, for example, had a deep veneration for the Blessed Virgin Mary, how it believed that the Eucharist really was the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ, and how the Mass was really a sacrifice, the sacrifice of Calvary represented on the altar. Once I learned about what's really going on behind kind of the curtain, so to speak, behind the Protestant-esque covering of the Mass, I realized, wow, this is what I'm attracted to. Some people argue, well, if we'd had the traditional Latin Mass, all these Protestant converts wouldn't happen. I don't know about other Protestant converts. I don't think that's true of me. Because I think what would have happened is, when I eventually went to Mass for the first time after looking into Catholicism, if it was the traditional Latin Mass I went to instead of just, it was a very generic, typical Novus Ordo I went to. I mean, irreverent, just going through the motions, 1970s music, all that stuff. Tons of Eucharistic ministers. If I had gone to a traditional Mass, I'm sure it would have confounded me. I'm sure it would have made me just kind of blown away. Like, what the heck's going on? It would seem very foreign to me. However, I would have seen these are people who are serious about worshiping God. This is different from Protestantism. And that's kind of what I was attracted to about Catholicism, was how is it different from Protestantism? Because I recognized that Protestantism was a dead end. It wasn't the way, the truth, and the life that Jesus has presented. It wasn't the one true church. So I don't think it would have kept me away, for example, and it might have attracted more people. Obviously, that's an argument we can't know the answer to. But the point is that it does not have the impact of attracting Protestants. I don't think there's any evidence of that. Yes, there's been Protestant converts, but there's been actually more Catholics who've become Protestant or left the church during this Protestantization. Another impact that, though, it has is it has made us so much less distinctive. One of the things that I just want to hammer home all the time is that distinctiveness is attractive. It is how we are distinctive that helps retain Catholics into the church. I wrote about this last week in my article for Crisis about the church should demand more, talking about the Amish. But the point is, it's those Catholic identity markers that keep us in the faith. I remember an article written years ago by Cardinal Dolan. And I know we have all our issues, you know, we have our opinions at Cardinal Dolan. But he actually made a great point. He was saying how things like no meat on Fridays, ashes on Ash Wednesday, the holy days of obligation that you take off work and go to Mass on a day like the Feast of the Assumption, those things distinctively mark you and make you part of a religious group that helps retain people in the church. When you obliterate those distinctive markers by becoming more like the Protestant denominations that surround you, people find little reason to stick with you through thick and thin. You're not really attached to it. If every Friday when you go out to lunch, you and your Catholic buddies don't eat meat and your other friends, co-workers do. If every Ash Wednesday you see your fellow Catholics with ashes on them. If every on Holy Days obligation you go to Mass. I mean, you do processions. You pray the rosary as a group. All these different things. When you have that, it keeps you into the church. It keeps you in the religious body. And this is true of any, this is like psychology, sociology. This isn't Catholicism specifically. Every religion that does that has distinctive markers. They retain their people better. But Catholics have obliterated our identity markers. We're embarrassed by them. The things that make us distinctive from Protestantism, we're embarrassed. And so what happens is the impact of being more like Protestants has actually led people to leave the Catholic Church rather than trying to get Protestants to help Protestants join it. And I think, so what should Catholics do? I think today's feast day is actually a great pointer for us in the right direction, that is. The Feast of the Assumption of Blessed Virgin Mary, the one thing it tells us many things, but one of the things it really tells us is the body is important. The body is essential. And what I mean by that is our Blessed Mother was assumed body and soul into heaven. She didn't just die and then her soul goes up to heaven and the body just wastes away. She was that first fruit of the resurrected body of Jesus Christ, of the resurrection. She's that first fruit of which we all will eventually, God willing, will attain. Actually, technically, we'll all receive our bodies again, whether we're in heaven or hell. But the glorified body that Our Lady was glorified in heaven, her body was glorified in heaven, that's what we all will eventually have if we're in heaven. But what it tells us is that we are body and soul. We are not a soul contained in a body. I remember I had a friend who would sometimes he'd talk about like when somebody died, to say their body died. No, they died. We don't say their body died. Yes, technically their soul continues to live on. When the soul and the body are separated, that is a true death of the person. I mean, they die. And we are body and soul composites. And that means the way in which we follow God, the way in which we worship God, the way which we practice our faith has to be body and soul. And if there's one thing that's distinctive about Protestantism over true Catholicism, is that it rejects the body. It rejects the idea of the body as part of the practice of the faith. It almost doesn't matter what your body does. What matters is what the spirit does. And so, for example, you can have services online, and that's no different than a service in person. And this is another way we become more Protestantized, is this acceptance of streaming masses. online masses. Yes, there are some situations where it's nice to have them for people who cannot leave the house and things like that. But the normalization of it, where most parishes have a streaming mass, I think is a bad move. I think that personally, every diocese should have maybe one streaming mass they offer. And of course, have at least one or two traditional Latin masses that are streamed for the whole world to see, because you don't need to have that in each country, even each diocese. But the idea, though, being that we participate in our faith through the body. And so that means our masses, our liturgy should be complex in the sense that they're a full body experience. Some people, Catholics who only go to Novus Ordo, talk about standing and sitting and kneeling. But boy, you get a whole exercise when you go to like a sung mass, for example, traditional Latin mass. And so this idea of the body being part of our faith, how we practice the faith. And so we see this in the traditional forms of piety. They often included physical things, like the rosary being one of them. That's a physical object. And we need to embrace that. That's something that some Catholics don't want to do in front of Protestants. Please, please never think like that. It was seeing Catholics pray the rosary that was a big impact on me. When I went to abortion clinics to pray in front of them, and the Protestants were just standing there twiddling our thumbs, maybe reading the Bible, and the Catholics had their rosaries, that had an impact on me. I saw it as like, that just makes sense that somebody would have something like that to help them pray. And so what we need to do is we need to embrace the ways the Catholicism has been lived in the past. Here's what's crazy about this. If you look at our history of how the faith has been practiced and spread, it has been wildly successful. What I mean by that is we literally conquered the Roman Empire. Then we conquered all of Europe. We went to the farthest reaches of the world with Catholicism, fully practiced, with a fully incarnational faith, body and soul composite, doing all these very, you know, talking about the Mass being a sacrifice, talking about how you need to do penances and all everything that there is to it. And we converted the world. Yet, for some reason now, we think we need to abandon all of those ways of doing it. We need to abandon the way we shared the faith. We need to abandon how we reached out to youth. We need to abandon how we did the liturgy. We need to abandon the sacred art and architecture, another part where the body matters. Your sight sees these objects, these physical objects of statues of saints, of stained glass windows, of incense, and all these things. Full body experience, not Protestantized. And we had this great success. Why would we abandon that? Why would we say, no, modern man is so different, we need to do it differently? That is the fatal error, I honestly believe, in how modern Catholics have practiced and tried to spread the faith. The error being that modern man is different. The fact is, it's a conceit to say modern man. Every single person who's ever lived talked about their fellow citizens as modern man in a certain sense. Because obviously, whatever's modern is whatever's now. So in the year 1000, modern man was other people who lived in the year 1000. It's only in today's modern world that we have this conceit that our modernity is different than other modernities. Modernity always has existed. It just exists in the current present. Ours is no different. Man is no different. There's a lot of different things out in the world, like technology and things of that nature. But man isn't any different. We still have the same problems, the same desires, the same longings. All these things are the same in man from the time of Adam and Eve until now. And so the idea that we need to change up how we do things radically. I'm not saying you don't make certain adaptations to culture and to the times. But there's a big difference between some minor adaptations and completely a wholescale change in how you do everything. And that's what we're trying to do, because we think modern man needs that. What we're seeing is that actually isn't what's working. So what we need to do is we need to be 100% unapologetically Catholic. And let's just talk about in those four ways real quick as I kind of finish up here in a few minutes, the four different things I said, how we're Protestantized. So in the Mass, in the liturgy, how can we be unapologetically Catholic? Well, the obvious answer is the traditional Latin Mass, because that was the unapologetically Catholic Mass for so long. At the very least, we need to have full reverence, ad orientem worship, sacred music, and things of that nature at the Mass. But really, the full answer is the traditional Latin Mass, with including the more robust calendar. So we have things like Ember Days, Rogation Days, which are, again, part of the body. Ember Days, you do penances. That is part of the body. Protestants abandoned all that, and unfortunately, Catholics have too. So you have your Ember Days, your Rogation Days, your different, your vigils before feast days are days of penance, your octaves, your saint days that just fill the calendar. Because one of the beauties about the old calendar is you have a saint every day, it seems like. There's no ordinary day. I mean, there's a few. I know there are some. But most days have some saint associated with it where you see, how does this person follow Jesus Christ? And how can I, what can I take away from this person's life so I can follow Jesus Christ better? It all still comes to Jesus Christ. It's not taking away from Jesus to talk about the great work he's done in people. I mean, that's nonsense. So the fuller calendar, the fuller Mass, unapologetically Catholic. In art and architecture, obviously, flood those parishes with statues. Get stained glass windows if you can. Have sacred images all around you. When you're building a new church, make it look like a Catholic church from the outside driving up. That's something that just, I just don't understand. You drive up to, there's a parish nearby that looks like a Pizza Hut from the outside. And you know who told me that? A Protestant friend of mine said that. He's like, that looks like a Pizza Hut. I'm like, you're absolutely right. It does look like a Pizza Hut. And it just like, let's stop doing that. Now, I will say, there has been a trend. I have noticed churches built in the last 20 years or so are on a whole better. I don't think they're quite there yet, but I have noticed they are better than those that were built from the 50s to about the 90s. They've gotten better. So that's a good sign that we're going in the right direction with that. I still notice, though, like there's a parish that was recently built here, probably about 3 or 4, it was right before COVID, so about 4 or 5 years ago. And it wasn't terrible. The problem is it was like built like a Catholic church, like a church in a lot of ways. The problem was it had that, it was completely mostly brick and almost very few statues, very few sacred images. So it was mostly blank. There was a crucifix, a good crucifix. There's Our Lady and St. Joseph, but they were in the back for some reason instead of in the front, almost like they would take away your attention to the crucifix or something. I mean, just a silly nonsense. But so we're not quite there yet. There's still this idea that we need to keep the building looking like it could be converted into a rec center without too much work. That's essentially what we do when we build churches. So make that art and architecture fully Catholic, really unapologetically Catholic. Youth outreach, something I talked about with Matt Gaspers, when we talk about World Youth Day. Let's replace the youth retreats and the youth gatherings with pilgrimages that are open to more than just the youth, but the youth are usually most attracted to that. They're the most healthy to do it as well. With things like pilgrimages, but most importantly, incorporate young Catholics into the life of the parish for adults. A 14-year-old kid does not have to be treated like a kid. A 14-year-old is a young adult. I think you honor them and you have more respect for them when you treat them like a young adult rather than like an older kid. And so incorporate them in the life of the parish. When your parish has a 40 hours devotion, the youth should be there as much as anybody else should be there. Adoration, the youth should be going to that. There doesn't need to be something directly towards youth. That's never been something the church has ever done, and there's no need for it. There can be things like pilgrimages and events of that nature, but let's not dumb down the faith, Protestantize the faith in order to try to attract the youth, which doesn't work. And then evangelization. In evangelization, I think the key aspect here is an embrace again of outside the church, there's no salvation. The idea that people need to become Catholic. Our new evangelization efforts typically downplay that. They make it like it'd be better if you were Catholic. It's a privileged way. It's a nice way. It's probably make you a little bit happier on this life, but you're going to heaven anyway. I think we need to really embrace this idea of outside the church, there is no salvation. And that's frankly what we lead with. Now, what God does with somebody who is not visibly outside the church, if they're still in the church and if they're in church some way, as Pope Pius IX suggests is possible. I'm not saying we reject that. What we simply do is we urge people to become Catholic. We do believe it makes a big difference whether or not they're Catholic, both on this side of heaven and eternally. And so we really embrace that. Ultimately, though, we're unapologetically Catholic again. We don't apologize for the fact that the Mass is a sacrifice, the sacrifice of Calvary represented. We don't apologize for our deep devotion to the Blessed Mother or the saints or anything of that nature. We embrace it and we use it as a way to attract people to the faith. And then the last thing I just want to leave this with is something I've already said, but I want to emphasize it again. The Catholic Church is the most successful religious group at attracting members in human history. And by that, I mean attracting them, not forcibly converting them. I mean, you could argue Islam is second, but Islam, I'd say, is disqualified because so many of their members became members through force. That's not true of Catholicism. We are the most attractive. We've been the most attractive religion in human history. We've brought more people to our religion than any others. And we did not do it by acting like Protestants. We didn't do it by saying, oh, modern man's so different. Let's just change up how we do everything every 20 years or so. No, what we did was we embraced the fullness of the faith that has been handed on to us by our Lord to the apostles and handed on all the way down to us. If we do that, then we really will have a situation in which the church can thrive and grow again. So we really need to stop being like the Protestants, stop this false ecumenism that says, okay, if we're more like Protestants, somehow that fosters ecumenism, even though it destroys the church. And said, be unapologetically Catholic and live our faith fully, body and soul. Okay, I'll leave it there for now. Until next time, everybody, God love you.